This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. Writer Michael Hedrick of Longmont has schizophrenia, and he has always wanted to write for the New York Times. So he approached editors there and pointed out that the paper often runs stories about mental illness, but rarely from the point of view of those who have it. The editors agreed, and Hedrick now writes a regular series about living with schizophrenia. And his insights are timely. Researchers writing in the American Journal of Psychiatry have just made a scientific leap in identifying the genes that cause the illness. The findings may help improve diagnosis and treatment. Meanwhile, Michael Hedrick says schizophrenia doesn't have to be debilitating. He joins us with his mother, Ginger, who's been alongside him for this at times difficult journey. Thanks to both of you for being with us.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you.
I want to start with a bit of your writing, Michael. This is actually from a blog post, and you say, "My mind likes to play its tricks, and me being the ever-gullible, struggling voice of reason, I can't seem to tell between the tricks and what's actually going on. The doctors call it schizophrenia, and in the 8.5 years that the devil has been living on my shoulder, we've become almost friends. Friends that conspire against each other, yes, but friends. Most of the time, I know when that f***er's whispering in my ear, but sometimes I don't, and that's when life starts to hurt." Take me back to when you first realized you had schizophrenia. You were in your early 20s. You had traveled from Colorado to New York City. Tell me why you went and what happened there.
Well, I was under the impression that I was a prophet. I was getting messages from TV and radio and books, basically just telling me that I had to go on a mission, that I had to save the world.
And that drew you to New York.
I originally was going to go to Washington, D.C., but then I realized that the UN was in New York, and my talents or whatever I thought I had would be better on the world stage. You know, I was pretty delusional.
What happened when you got there?
Well, they were closed that day. And so I just ended up walking around New York looking for signs, you know, trying to figure out these little indications that people were telling me to go a certain way or do a certain thing.
What might that look like? How do signs appear?
For instance, if somebody patted their head or if somebody waved their finger this way or something like that, I would automatically assume that it was for me. And with the patting of the head, it was a symbolic thing. It was like they were recognizing that I was a king and that I had a crown on my head or something like that.
And what became of the mission?
Well, eventually, after going through Boston, I took a bus to a small town in Massachusetts called Woods Hole because I thought there was a hole through the woods to Canada because I figured I'd just go to Canada and live out my days, I guess. So I was hitchhiking out on these rural roads, and this woman picked me up and took me into her house for a day, and she fed me, and she bought me a train ticket back home to Boulder.
How long was he gone, Ginger?
He was gone 5 days. We had put out a missing person report, and he just completely disappeared.
And it was just this this woman back east who was kind enough to intervene as he was hitchhiking.
She was a savior.
And then came the diagnosis of schizophrenia.
Right.
You'd had him hospitalized when he returned.
We picked Mike up in Denver at the train station, and he immediately started talking about his trip to New York and wanting to save the world and spread world peace. And my husband and I looked at each other, and we, you know, thought something was very, very wrong. So we took him directly to the hospital in Boulder.
How long were you there? 3 days?
7 days.
7 days.
Hmm. It was a 72-hour hold that got extended to a week.
What was your reaction to the diagnosis of schizophrenia, Michael?
I would probably say heartbroken. Just knowing that I was crazy and I would basically be ostracized from the world because of this label.
Were you immediately put on medication?
Yes, but I have been cycling through different medications over the last 8 years. I'm trying to find something that works without the side effects that have been kind of unpleasant.
What are those?
For instance, weight gain. There was one when I was just diagnosed. It was a side effect called akathisia, where it was as if I couldn't sit still. I had to move. I had to constantly move. I'd go for 5-mile walks and still need to move. You know, I couldn't get rid of this feeling that I was just so restless.
It sounds like it's almost an experiment for these 8 years of which drugs work, a constant experiment.
It has been an experiment, but it's been a slow experiment. You know, I'll try something for a few months to a year or two, and then I'll gain a bunch of weight, and then I'll realize that something's not right. Just been constantly trying to figure out the best drugs for me, and thankfully I've found a good combination.
And so you feel fairly normal, physically and otherwise?
Fairly normal,
fairly
I would
normal.
Say.
Yeah. Well, you know, the most recent piece that you wrote for the New York Times was about not the power of medication, but the power of routine.
Yes.
In your life. And that once you gave up drugs and alcohol and you committed to routine, things got better. Why is routine so important and important enough to write a piece in the New York Times on?
It's basically the structure of things. To have this structure in your life that you can count on, knowing that when you wake up in the morning, you will be doing certain things. It takes a lot of the randomness out of a life with schizophrenia, I guess.
And the randomness is hard. Why?
I would say you don't have a good feeling going into something that you aren't sure of. And so when you're sure of your routine every day, it just provides that level of comfort that you can, you know, count on, I guess.
Ginger, what have you noticed about the importance of routine for Michael?
It relieves the stress of having to make decisions about what he's going to do that day. So that's just one less thing that he has to stress about.
To manage.
To manage, exactly. The goal being to keep things as chill as possible and with very little stress in his day.
And do bad days still occur?
All the time.
All the time. And what does that look like?
Nowadays, it's just kind of a sadness, you know, that I'll have. But before it was, you know, there was some heavy paranoia where I would not feel like going out into public.
Ginger, what's your definition of a bad day for Michael?
They seem to be coming rarer and rarer lately, which is a good thing. I can remember days in the past, however, that the paranoia would be so bad that he would not be able to go into a grocery store just for fear of people watching him. Not being able to make eye contact was a really big thing for him for quite a while. Now I think you have it mastered. So,
yeah, it hasn't been an issue in the interview. What was it? What was it about eye contact, Michael?
I don't know. It was just this connection you had with this other person, and sometimes it felt too deep. Sometimes you were worried about what they would think if it did feel too deep, or if it was, you know, too brief. Would they think I was weird?
You know, as we said a bit earlier, there's new research out identifying the genetic background of schizophrenia. And scientists say this could vastly improve diagnosis. If doctors had diagnosed this earlier, say when Michael was a little kid, how do you think that would have changed life?
Well, I think our family was not knowledgeable at all about mental illness or schizophrenia. And I think we would have obviously become much more knowledgeable about the illness than going into it blind when Mike was 22.
What was that learning curve like? I mean, all of a sudden you're confronted with this reality that your son isn't quite who you thought he was.
Right.
You know, he is different at least than the picture you'd had.
Right. As soon as he was discharged from the hospital and came home to our home, again, we had absolutely no knowledge of the illness or how it manifested or what his symptoms were, how to take care of him. And so it was learning on the job, if you will, for us.
So your work has not only appeared in the New York Times, Michael, but also in Salon and Scientific American. And you penned a book based on your experiences, Connections, which received an award at the Pikes Peak Writers Conference. And you wrote in the book, what can be said about a man who doesn't show his face? What compels a man to hide from the world? And you've alluded to some of that, but how does it feel not to be hiding anymore?
It's freeing, I would say that. It's taken a load off my shoulders to not have to live with this secret burden of being schizophrenic, of not having to hide this illness from my friends and my family.
What would you say is the goal of your writing overall?
Truthfully, or my main goal is to just get a house in the mountains and to live peacefully for the rest of my life. But, you know, another big goal is to get rid of this stigma that people have about mental illness, about schizophrenia. Like when you hear the word schizophrenia, it's scary. It's a scary word.
Yeah.
Because you don't know if that person is unstable or, but most of the time, these people are, you know, victims, they're suffering. And it's not something to be so fearful of, I think.
What are you thinking of for your next column?
I'm doing one on making friends as a person with schizophrenia.
Has that been difficult?
That's been very difficult for me. Just being able to trust people is the main thing. You know, when you have a good deal of paranoia, it's hard to let anybody in that much or to be vulnerable with anybody because you always have this fear at the back of your head that they're going to say something rude or they're going to betray you or something like that. So it's hard to let go and be vulnerable with people.
Thank you so much for being with us. Thanks to both of you.
Yeah, no problem.
Thank you.
Michael Hedrick writes about schizophrenia for the New York Times. He lives in Longmont. His mother, Ginger, lives in Boulder. This is Colorado Matters from CPR News.